This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Radio South Tyneside, your caring community radio.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
I'm delighted to welcome a special guest on today's show. A very close friend of mine and former member of United Folk. Her name's Margaret Story, who's been involved in mission work in Bluefields, Nicaragua, in Central America, for over 13 years now. It all began when she went out there for 3 weeks in 2002 to help build a vocational centre, and she fell in love with the country and its people. She made two more visits after that, and then in 2009, when Margaret took retirement for work, an opportunity came up for her to work with a charity called SIFT, which stands for Seed International Fund Trust. What happened then turned her life around. You'll be hearing all about it in today's programme. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Sheila.
It's lovely to have you back here again.
It's lovely to be back here.
How did all that come about? Weren't you looking for direction in your life then?
Oh, I was. So when I retired in 2008, I went out as a testing time for 11 weeks to Bluefields. I needed to know whether God was going to open a door further for me or close it on Nicaragua. And so I was already sponsoring a child through SIFT while I was with this other charity. And so I got in touch with them and said, I'm planning to go to Bluefields in October 2008. Is there any way I could meet up with my sponsor child? And they replied, we go out for 3 weeks every year to pay all the school fees, seat all the university students, and they welcomed me to be with them. And so I was with them for that 3 weeks, and it was brilliant. I met my sponsor child, and during one of our morning quiet times, the leader of SIFT said, Margaret, you've got such a rapport with this place. I wish we could use you. We don't know what happens with the children from 1 year to the next, and you could be that bridge for us, seeing how the children get on all of the time. And so I said to him, well, I'm offering my services. I will volunteer as long as I can always go home every year to visit my family. And so they went back home, they met with the leaders, interviewed me and welcomed me aboard. And so in 2009, I started my regular time out there. And that is now 13 years.
I'm wondering the reaction of your family. What was their response?
I had already warned them that I knew, I felt God was calling me into full-time ministry, mission work. And I had said to God, I'd go anywhere you send me, but please make it Bluefields, but please not until I no longer have my mum. My mum was dependent on me, and I really didn't want him to use me before that. And he honoured that, and my children knew that. And so when Mum did die, one said to the other, do you realise what this means now? Mum's going to be off. And they accepted it. For all as much as they would still love me to be at home, they will always say how proud they are of me, they respect what I do, and would never stand in my way. So for all the things that have gone wrong in those 13 years, they are still my biggest supporters.
Isn't that wonderful?
I love them.
Yeah. Super. So really, you saw a lot of brokenness when you were out there. How much did that affect the first choice of him, the one you've got for his Beauty for Brokenness? Why
well,
that one?
I've got the video of it, and so many of those pictures on the video I see in Bluefields. I see the need, I see the injustice, I see the brokenness. And that, the words of that just are so, so intense that it can touch our hearts, because we can be the ones that serve the people out there with, or serve in any country when we're dealing with this brokenness. We can be that spark that flans into a flame, and just serve the Lord in bringing people, bringing hope out of despair, bringing love out of hatred. It is just a song of justice that we need to take on board, and I just love every word of that song, and I could cry every time I watch the video because I see so much need, and I see that need most of the time in Bluefields as well. And so it melts my heart, not a cold heart, but it melts my heart to want to span into a larger flame to serve.
Let's listen to it now before come at you with any more questions, Margaret.
Beauty for brokenness, hope for despair. Lord, in the suffering, this is our prayer. Bread for the children, justice, joy, peace. Sunrise to sunset, your kingdom increase. Shelter for fragile lives, cure for their ills. Work for the craftsmen, trade for their skills. Land for the dispossessed, rights for the weak. Voices to plead the cause of those who can't speak. God of the poor, friend of the weak, give us compassion, we pray. Melt our cold hearts, the tears fall like rain. Come change our love from a spark to a flame. Refuge from cruel wars, havens from fear, cities for sanctuary, freedoms to share. Peace to the killing fields, scorched earth to green. Christ for the bitterness, his cross for the pain.
Beautiful song there, Margaret. Lovely choice. When you consider what Bluefields was like when you first arrived and what it's like now when you've just left it, what are the main differences and how has it changed in that time?
I think that's difficult because it can sound quite disappointing, but there is progress that water pipes have now been laid these past 2 years. And so some houses have now got piped water into their homes. Some of them choose not to have it connected because they're going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. Like if we're on a water meter, we pay what we use. And some of these people know they're not going to be able to afford to pay for their water and so choose to still walk to a community well and carry water. But that is progress, that water pipes have been laid. And also, for me to have a return trip to the capital by plane, it would cost me $126. For years now, they've been building a road from Bluefields to the capital. It takes 7 hours on a bus, but that road is now completed. So instead of a $126 return on a plane, I can get there and back for $20. On a bus. And it means now people from Bluefields can access the capital if they need hospital treatment. They can access it much, much cheaper. So that is progress. But other than that, things are just so bad because of weather conditions. Houses are damaged because of the weather. They're very prone to hurricanes and tornadoes. The conditions shatter the houses, take the roofs off, flatten them with uprooted trees, and because of the pandemic as well, employment has got worse, and so Nicaragua is probably in its worst state of employment and finances. They're absolutely, virtually crippled. a lot of that has to do with the government, but we can't turn political in this, but that is the case. It is a sad state of affairs in Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. And Bluefields is the most poorest part of Nicaragua. Yes. So I see the worst. But unemployment is terrible. People are just begging all the time.
Mm-hmm. You tell me that the people are happy nevertheless. They have a joy.
Never complain.
A deep joy, and they never complain.
What
do they like out there?
They're so used to everything happening bad, they accept it. Mm-hmm. They will just dust themselves down, get up and start all over again. I truly respect them for that. Mm-hmm. They will come begging, but it's not woe is me. You know, they just, when they, you know, they'll come and find the white woman, because mm-hmm. the white woman will help you kind of thing. Yes. And they just get on with it. They accept everything that goes wrong, because that's the way they've been brought up. That's their lives, of seeing their houses damaged, no work. That's just their life.
They must be so grateful that their children are being educated, whereas before there was no education.
Absolutely.
There's hope in the future.
Absolutely.
For their families.
Absolutely. But it's still sad, because some of the children, one of our schools, I deal with 9 schools, one of them has a promotion ceremony when the child is halfway through high school. So in third year of high school, they'll have a special promotion ceremony, and it's just to encourage the children to keep going. Mm. Because at that stage, when these kids are about 14, some of the parents will say, you need to stop your education now, I need you to work.
Oh, right.
And so this promotion ceremony sparks the parents on to say, yes, they've only got 2 years left and they'll be qualified, they'll have a diploma. And so that, it, for all the, you know, they are being educated, some parents still have to take their child out, but they have managed halfway through secondary school, which is amazing, but better when they continue, because SIFT take them all the way through university as well.
So it's quite a sacrifice these parents are making
allowing
their children to have this education.
Sure.
And not earn the money which is going to bring in food for the
yes,
family. It's
yes.
a great
yes.
sacrifice. How did you cope with life out there first, Margaret? It's so different to England. You know, I remember telling us about the ants in the kitchen, in the teapots everywhere, and the odd tarantula in your bedroom, mosquitoes and sandflies on the river, and mice and cockroaches and bats. Any one of those would have prevented me going.
I still haven't got used to them, but I accept them. It's not pleasant going to bed and having to, you know, clear your bed of ants before you climb in it, or opening a drawer and find that the rat has got to what you are going for before you went, or going for a banana and find that the gecko has already trundled its way inside. You know, it's Pastor Ed, whose house I rent a room in, he thinks it's protein. He'll say, oh, come on, Miss Margaret, it's only protein, just eat them. Because he'll say, if I see ants running over my meal, I won't eat. If I see ants already covering the bread in the bread bin, I will not eat bread till fresh is bought. And he thinks I'm a wimp. He thinks I just whinge on because it's good protein. But no, I will never accept. I will never get used to it. I accept it because that's part of life, and it's part of... it's what I've got to get. If I want to be out there, I've got to accept, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, but I won't eat food that the ants have run over. I can't.
So can we just say you've got lots of pets out there, Margaret? So, Margaret, how did you communicate at first? I mean, it's very hard being fluent in a different language. That must have been quite difficult for you.
It was. And at first, even for all that, the small words or phrases I was using, I was too embarrassed to use them in case I got the accent wrong. So I was very, very self-conscious. But it's amazing how just mixing with people, and they're good enough to keep me right. If I use a wrong phrase, or if I, you know, can they say I'm struggling, they'll help me. But one of the best ways of communication at first was sign language.
Mm.
You know, to approve of a child that is showing you a picture that they've done or their school report, the smile or a hug just says it all. You know, how, you know, I'm so proud of you, and just put the thumbs up. Or allow a child to carry your bag, mm-hmm. or let them embrace you. That is so much in communication that you don't need words.
Mm.
These children long to be loved. A lot of them are denied that at home. There's not a great love shown in many cases, and they just want to embrace you. And that is one of the best ways of communication, to let a child know you're accepting them and loving them as they are, as filthy dirty as they are, you can still hug them.
Yes.
And that is, to me, communication. But my Spanish has improved. But as I say, when I make a mistake, sometimes they laugh at me, and, oh, Miss Margaret, no, that's wrong. But they're with me, yeah, yes. It's not a critical laugh. It's, and they'll help me along. Sometimes they like to branch off into their broken English and let me see, or then practice their English on me as well, which makes me feel good.
Yes. Do they have a name for you?
I'm Miss Margaret, or I'm Margarita, or I'm Grandma.
Is that in Spanish?
Yes, yes.
So tell us in Spanish.
Abuela.
Right.
And Margaret is Margarita, so it's Miss Margarita. Yes, but Abuela, or Mom.
Yes.
But they don't mean Mom as in their mother. That is a term that they use quite a lot. Yes, Mom, the children are brought up. If I ask them the question, they'll say yes. The parent will say, what do you say? Yes, Mom. And that is their term, that is their respect for people.
Yes. What have been your proudest moments out there, Margaret?
Seeing how well the children do. Because that is my job out there. All of the projects I get on with are my spare time things. But seeing the progress of the children. One boy that we had, he was beaten. He was probably the most badly beaten boy in Bluefields. His mum would tie him to the post and whack him and whack him. Leave him, come back and whack him again. And if he could run away, he would run away and he would come to our house. And I even taught him to knit and play cards. But then, and the mum was taken into, he was taken into care so that the mother could get some proper training on how to bring up her children. But they had no electricity, they had no water, and that boy studied like mad. He was the student of excellence in the school. As soon as he finished class, he would get on with his studies until they could no longer see. So they were in bed for about 6 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
I got him into an orphanage, and he did well in the orphanage, but he was continuous with school. And when he finished high school, he got a scholarship in Costa Rica because he was one of the most brilliant educated children.
Yes.
He has done his 3 or 4 years in Costa Rica. Last year, 2 years ago, he graduated from that, and he's now doing another project in America.
Wow. And what was his name, Margaret?
He was Kanan. Uh-huh. Kanan Chow.
And how many others have graduated now? You've been there 13 years. How many graduated students have you got?
I couldn't tell you how many, but we've got another two this year. And one of them I met in 2002. I used to watch the bin truck go up the bank, and he would come running out of his house with his big long pole. He would clamber up onto the truck, and he was delving among the garbage before it got to the tip to be unloaded. When it got unloaded, he was there with his big stick, and he would, you know, scavenge into the bags and find what he could. He was the second youngest of about 7 children. We sponsored him from being in either preschool or first grade primary. We took him all the way through high school. He's now finished, just this year, he has finished university. He's been doing 2 courses, one on a Saturday and one through the week. So this year he's coming out with a degree in primary teaching and in administration in ports and airports. that boy is coming up with 2 degrees. He's written to his sponsor to say, you have sponsored me for 17 years.
Yes.
And I am now turning to be a professional and I owe it all to you.
That's truly wonderful. It sounds like two boys there, absolutely desperate to swim their way out from
True.
The bottom of the mud and the mire
yeah.
to the surface. And the sunlight's come out on them. That
yeah.
is a beautiful
yeah.
story,
yes.
Margaret. Beautiful. What have been your saddest moments?
I suppose there's been quite a few when you see houses demolished with floods. But I suppose when I didn't get home last year because of the pandemic and political reasons and everything, and so I spent the 4 months I would have been in England still in Bluefields. One of our mothers with 3 children, we sponsor 2 of them, was pregnant, and there was so much wrong with the pregnancy, she had to be delivered in the capital and she was going to have to travel alone. Her husband was out of work. He said, well, I can't come with you, I need to look after work and see to the 3 children. So she was facing a baby that looked as if it had so many syndromes. And so I said, I'm coming with you. And so I travelled the 7-hour journey and I was with her. It's too long to explain all of the horrendous conditions of the hospital and how she was treated. But I was there for her. And the baby survived for 7 days. And she was only 3.5 pound born and was put straight into intensive care. But the fact that my friend, the mother, could only visit the baby 1 hour in the day, couldn't hold her, couldn't take a photograph of her, and so she never held that baby until she had died. But I was there with her the whole time.
Mm.
And she admits, God was every step ahead of us that whole time. There were so many things happened to know that there was no doubt that God had a hand in it all. How we got her back to Bluefields, the bus wouldn't let us take a dead baby in a coffin on the bus. Everything, God opened doors, windows, everything, the whole way to get us back. And the baby was to be buried the next day as soon as we got back. And I still hear the screams of that woman at the graveyard because she was blaming God for taking her child and everything. Now, I've worked with her great this past year and she is on a high for God. She is doing so much work. She messages me every day for who she's been to visit, who she's praying for, making sure if someone's sick that they know the Lord. She has absolutely blossomed.
Some people can fall or rise with tragedy,
well,
can't they?
She certainly I could see she was rose. Falling, but all of a sudden she's risen.
Yes.
And I've told her that if I was to go through that situation to help somebody, I could only sympathise with them. I says, God is going to use you now because you can empathise.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's like to lose a baby. And that is how God is going to use you now. And she's absolutely accepted it.
There seems to be a real spiritual depth in the people there, Margaret. Is that out of their need or...?
Well, possibly it is quite a Christian community, but their Bibles are important. They'll come knocking at the door. You know, some will come asking for food or clothes, but some of them say, I need a Bible. There are little shops on the roadway, on the roadside. They don't do very much business, but for those that can read, they will be sitting reading their Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. They come to church as families. So as much men as there is women and children, it is a family orientated thing going to church. And if there's a meeting on, these people will turn up at a meeting. And I keep thinking back home here, when in a meeting, you know, if someone will someone open this meeting with prayer or will you close with prayer? You know, some people will look down at the floor, look up at the ceiling in the silence. They can't get in first to pray. Even the children are beautiful prayers, so prayer is very important. And even if I say, okay, I'll see you next week at this time and we'll do whatever, God first, they will always reply, God first, God willing, that they realise that God has got to be in their lives before they do something, and it's his agreement that it will happen with.
There's such a richness of faith in that.
It is, yeah.
I remember you writing to me once a very moving story. Can I just read it to you, Margaret? She turned around to me and made a gesture that she had nothing to give.
Mm.
I passed her two cordobas and she went out so proudly that she had something to offer. Then when she got back to her seat, she turned again smiling and said, "Thank you." Later on, from Pastor Ed, I discovered that she had four children and she sells her body to feed them. I find it hard to condemn her as she sees it as doing it for all the right reasons, and she still turns up at church, so obviously that's important to her too. What was it Jesus said about casting the first stone? Do you remember that?
That was very true.
Very little.
She was so, well, she had nothing. And I mean, even now I take a bag of cordobas and I watch for, you know, the person that hasn't got anything to go forward to put in the offering plate. And that lady, all many years ago now, that, but she was one of them, and she just, you can tell by the eyes, the desperation or the embarrassment, and she was just, she walked to that offering plate so proudly to put her two little cordobas in, about 10 pence, you know.
It's as though you're living inside of Jesus' parables, you know, and stories, really, when you think about the fraction that the rich people gave in the temple, but the widow with one small coin gave more than any of those because it was everything she had. And you're seeing all of this. Margaret, we've run out of time for this week, I'm afraid. Thank you so much for your time. You've given us such a fascinating opening insight there into the lifestyle of the people of Bluefields, Nicaragua. And our listeners will be pleased to hear that next Sunday we'll be hearing more from you when we air the second half of this interview. We'd be looking forward to that so much. So to finish, let's listen to the final verse of the hymn you chose, which opened today's programme, Beauty for Brokenness, with words and music by Graeme Kendrick. This is Sheila Hamill, along with mission worker Margaret Story and Andrew Ridgwick, our technician, saying bye for now.
Lighten our darkness, breathe on this flame, until your justice burns brightly again. Until the nations learn of your ways.